Today is June 7th, 2019. This is episode number 515 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of TMO and, Philadelphia. Ooh, to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast. Also, Broadway. Going to go to New York City, too. Very excited about that. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, join us over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you straight to our Facebook group. And listen, it's been a long week, WWDC week. I'm super tired. I did not write an intro for John Keat. So joining me today is John Keat to take a few victory laps.
Hey, Brian, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. Tired, but good.
Yeah, I imagine it's a tough week for you guys. You got so much coverage. So kudos.
Thank you. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm a little confused on what I'm going to be doing with the Mac Pro.
We'll get to that.
That's been my excitement of the week, like figuring out what to do with that. But otherwise, I'm good.
We will get to that. So before we get to that, I'm going to mention that all week, these five companies have been helping to pay for all of our WWDC coverage, including this discussion today. That's John, you can look for your check in the mail later. iMazing, Smile, Carbon Copy Cloner, Samebox, and Direct Mail. These five companies are like all good companies too. Love that and happy to mention them here. I'll tell you a little bit more about them in the middle of the show. But in the meanwhile, John, You get your first victory lap on the new Mac Pro.
I don't even care. I'm more interested. Are you going to get one? I remember we had a discussion a while back where I suggested you might want to be on the fence with regard to getting your iMac, right? You were thinking about getting a maxed out iMac, which is a great machine, and to see just what happens with the Mac Pro. And now we know what's happened with the Mac Pro. So has that pushed you in one direction or the other?
Okay, well, that is a great question, John, and a great question in part because I imagine that a lot of our listeners here are probably asking themselves the same question because, of course, we all want it, right?
Of course.
The question is, do we need it? Now, do I need it? No, I don't need it. But you know what I do need is the ability to open up a door and put some RAM in. That's one of the things I need. Yeah, it's funny, John.
iMac has that. The iMac has
that. The new iMac has that. But I was at the – I took Dave Hamilton down to Apple Park to see the visitor center. By the way, so side rail. This is our first side rail. We're already going to have a side rail.
Okay.
If you put in Apple Park in Apple Maps, it gives you directions to the visitor center. It does not give you directions to the entrance to Apple Park. It's so Apple, right?
That's slight oversight. Or
no, it's not an oversight. It's incredibly deliberate. The entire point of the visitors, I mean, I imagine they spent at least $1 million building that visitor center, maybe two or three.
Huh.
Right? And that money was spent specifically and entirely to keep us away from Apple Park. Right? Its entire raison d'etre is to keep us out of the way.
Well, you know, you should thank your stars because if they built it just maybe a year later, they would have sent you to a back alley someplace where a guy named Bruno just smacks you around and tells you to go away from here. You bother me.
That's possibly true. But I was there with Dave Hamilton. He hadn't seen it before, and he's here in town for WWDC. And we're looking at the I went over because they had a new iMac and the now 2-year-old iMac Pro back to back. And, you know, and I knew what I was going to see, but it's just like I wanted to see it visually where you've got the door to open up the iMac to change out your RAM and your, I don't think you can do the hard drive. Can you do the hard drive?
My understanding is if you crack the case, you can.
You're right. It's cracking the case. But you can at least change your own RAM or add RAM. And you know, and then back-to-back, just a few inches away, is the much more expensive Pro machine, the iMac Pro. And there's no door. And it's just like, man, What was Apple thinking with that one? What was Apple thinking with that one? So, with the Mac Pro, though, you can put up to 1.5 terabytes of RAM, which is so crazy, which is just so absolutely crazy. I would love to be able to do that, and I would love to be able to add my own internal hard drives. That seems like a really fun thing to do.
So, yeah, just two caveats quickly there. You can only add the 1.5 terabyte if you get the 24-core or the 28-core machine. They have the 12 DIMMs. If you get the lower core counts, you're only going to get 6 slots there, so you'll be limited to a measly 750 gigabytes of RAM.
Which is far more than a user like me would ever need. So I don't need that machine by any stretch of the imagination. I would probably be just fine with the recently announced iMac. But yeah, of course I'd like one.
Yeah, so it kind of depends on what pricing you can get, right? I'm definitely not in the market for anything but a Mac Pro because I have a Mac Pro and I got like 6 screens to drive and I'm not going to.
How many of those screens do you use?
Well, I use all of them. It's funny. My buddy Walt used to make fun of me. He's like, "You can't possibly use those." And then we'll have like this massive filing. He's like, "Yeah, dude, we got to do this at your place because this is impossible to do with all the paper that we have to deal with when we do these massive government filings. We have so much open at the same time."
There are times when you have open documents that you are actively working on. I mean, obviously not more than one at a time, but that you were working on during a session on using all 6 screens.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of incredible. You should see before like the advent of computers, what, a patent attorney's desk look like, because you'd have multiple, you'd have a physical file folder that's giant. They're more than legal size tall, and they open into unfurl into 4 sections. So if you just unfurl one document, basically half your desk was filled with this. And then you'd have a stack of 4 or 5 of these things, and then you'd have art references that an examiner cited against you. They give you 3 or 4 references, so you got those open. And you're trying to, do something on the screen while you're writing it up, and you're just referring to, because someone may have cited 3 or 4 different pieces of prior art against you, so you have to have those open, and you're looking at the figures from that prior art and the actual write up of that prior art. So that's just 2 pages at any one time for each piece. So it's incredibly paper heavy, and having the 6 screens really like transformed my life to not having that disaster. And then you can imagine the papers get out of order, and oh my gosh, it's hell on earth.
Okay,
and
so
someone comes and steals that file from your desk, which is always awesome.
I know that you had 10 screens at one time.
Yes,
right, and that setup was just insane. That was just, I mean, you know, it was nerdy,
super
and
useful,
and incredibly jealousy inducing. So, but I also know that your displays are all old.
Yeah, they're the 30-inch displays, but they're fine because it's not about, like, don't get me wrong, extra resolution is great, but what for at least my task, and it'll be different for obviously for everyone else, but what I'd like to, I keep the documents on my screen relatively life-size. So if you put up an actual piece of paper to the screen, it'd be more roughly the same size.
Yeah, sure.
And I'll have maybe 2 documents per screen open with some other things. So yeah, if that had extra resolution, awesome. But, you know, I'm sitting about 2.5 feet from it, so it's not that big a deal. At some point, I think the real solution, I discussed this with John Martellaro, that he's in a big believer in 8K. And I'm telling you, 8K for the desktop is going to rule everyone's world, because a lot of people currently today have 2 4K displays on their desk, 2 30-inch monitors, and they think nothing of it. Well, a 65-inch monitor takes the same amount of space on their desk, right? The length of 2 30 inches is basically the same as the 60-inch, but now you just have 2 more screens atop of that, right, vertically up. So you have the equivalent of 4 of those displays, or roughly 33 megapixels. worth of displayable area. So, and currently my six screens provide about 24 megapixels of displayable area. So the rough point is, if I put the same, I could put up roughly the same number of physically sized pages on an 8K display that I can on my current six screens. And that's going to be a much cheaper solution. Oh, today it's a much cheaper solution than getting the 6K display from Apple. They're charging between $6,000 to $7,000 for that, for their 6K display. You can get for $6,000.
Wait, isn't it $49.99 without a stand and $59.99 with a stand?
Right, unless you get the matte, the etched matte version, right. Which, and I don't understand why anyone wouldn't, like, oh, please, I'm going to get this reference quality display, and then I'd like it to be as glary as humanly possible. Yeah, that's a high segment in that market, right? So everyone's getting the etched matte version. Let's be honest with ourselves. And yeah,
if you by the way, Dave says that it's truly magical.
Yeah, whatever.
He said that the clarity, there's no clarity tax.
Yeah. Okay.
With that, why are you dismissing what I'm telling you?
Because an 8K display will be better for me.
Well, that's fine, but they don't exist yet.
Yes, they do. Samsung sells it right now. You can get it for $5,000.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Right.
I stand corrected.
Yeah. Dell sells an old one that's stinky.
Okay, I've X'd that out. And now nobody knows what a nincompoop I am.
Anyway, so... What that display is magical for, and is for a very, very small niche within a niche within a niche. And I'm super happy Apple made the screen. For what it is, it's actually a good deal. But the number of people that need a reference monitor,
That's aimed at Hollywood.
Yeah,
it truly is aimed at Hollywood.
If you're NBC, okay, you need a reference monitor because you're broadcasting, right? But most people don't. Have that. They want maybe some color accuracy, which is quite a big step down from that. And actually, the vast majority of kind of enthusiasts and pros, they wanted the equivalent of just give me $1,000 version of the iMac 5K display. That's what everyone wanted. Yeah. Hopefully, Apple will hear that and actually produce that. But in the meantime, that's just a stupidly priced device that I, don't get me wrong, I think is fabulous. I have no desire, have no interest in it.
It's let me give you some context for the price and for this thing's existence, kind of building on what you're saying. So they, during John Gruber's talk show live, this year was, it was Craig Federighi and Greg Joswiak, who were the guest stars.
Was the name of the show guest Sycophants? Stars.
Shh.
All right.
And
yeah, keep going.
And the two Apple executives were talking about how lots of Hollywood workflows work like this. You've got, you know, the editing person, you've got the effects person, and you've got the compositing person or whatever. And, you know, everything's going down the line, and then it gets to the end and you get a $43,000, according to Apple, reference monitor for the very first time, because how many 43,000 monitors does a studio want to pay for?
Sure.
And so essentially what Apple is doing is introducing a monitor for the creative pros that John, that you were talking about Apple ignoring for so long, right?
Yeah,
you're the one who listed this banner, beat this drum for a very long time. And Apple is producing this reference monitor that can be used through throughout that production line for less money than only having one of Sony's $43,000 reference monitors.
And that's great. Like I said, I'm very happy this is something they made. I am very displeased that the only thing they made was the Marie Antoinette version of this monitor. they needed to make a one for, hey, that maybe someone with a Mac Mini might want to use. And, hey, maybe someone that doesn't need a reference monitor or video pure fidelity workflow and just wants kind of a 5K iMac quality display. There's a much bigger need for that display, and Apple should sate that part of the market as well. And one thing I want to correct is it's not just the pros, because I've always grumbled about, it's kind of like our debate on what the word modular means, right? I took the much more plain English version of
it. You took the correct version of it. I took the incorrect side.
Well, don't get me wrong. Like I said, I was still rooting for your I was never rooting for the flapjack iMac, Mac Mini version of this, but I was very much rooting for your processor version, because it would mean that they were being very bold very early, which I generally like. But anyway, it was funny. One of the head of the Mac Pro development group at Apple did an interview, and I forget this guy's name. I keep forgetting it. There's a really good podcast with him on there, Doug Brooks. And he's like, you know, we kind of tried to foreshadow what we were doing, and we thought we did a really good job by saying wink, wink, nod, nod, modular. And then we were like appalled when we saw people putting these stack of Mac Minis together. We're like, how much more can we, you know, do this without revealing it? Anyway, but the point is, it gets into interpretation, right, of what a pro is or what modular is.
And my problem was modular. My problem, I've never thought of a tower as modular.
Well, like I said, mine was the much more plain English. You have a RAM module.
And you were correct.
You have storage modules, everything in these things. Anyway, whatever. But the point is, it gets into there are also these schisms as what does a Mac Pro mean? And I've since revised that. Like, it's not just pros, it's enthusiasts. The core of Apple's market, the people that saved Apple in 96 were enthusiasts. Many of those enthusiasts were pros, but yet many pros are totally not enthusiasts and don't care if Apple lives or dies, right? But it was the enthusiast market. And so in 2006, when the first Mac Pro came out, it was priced at $2,500. And enthusiasts could get into that machine, as well as high-end pros. And what this Mac Pro, this new cheese grater, and by the way, we got to talk about this cheese grater. First of all, everyone interviewed...
Stop. Finish your thought. We'll come back to that.
All right. Remind me of that thought. It's an important one. Anyway, so the enthusiasts are the ones that really saved Apple. And this machine basically is no dogs allowed to enthusiasts. No enthusiasts allowed. $6,000 for a bare machine with a laughably small storage.
I thought it started at 5.2. Does it start at 6?
No, it starts at 6, $5.99.
Huh, okay.
It's a kind of an insult to those enthusiasts. And I don't mean that this should be so cheap that everyone could get it, but come on. I mean, this is just so Marie Antoinette. This is Apple just like, how about put out a machine with 4 cores and 8 or 16 gigs of RAM and get the price in at $3,300 or something where like at least some enthusiasts.
Yeah, even $39.99.
I was saying like $33.99, right? Like $3,400. That would still be pricey, but it would kind of be, you know, cost adjusted somewhere in line with what the original Mac Pro was from 2006. But this is, don't get me wrong, and this is one thing you always criticize me, that like I talk about only stuff that I'm interested in. And while I'm personally very happy for myself because I'm likely going to get some version of this, I'm really disappointed for the enthusiast. This is not an enthusiast attainable machine anymore. It is a middle finger to the enthusiast market, and nobody is criticizing Apple for this. They're instantly the apologists about face said that we're saying the trash can all you ever need. Now they're like, no, this is great, but this is not for you. Stop that. Expandable machine not for enthusiasts? It should be.
I think from Apple's viewpoint, and I mean rightly or wrongly, I'm not necessarily saying that this is correct, but from Apple's standpoint, the iMac Pro is the device for the enthusiasts.
No, enthusiasts want to upgrade things. Enthusiasts want slots. I mean, this is so rinky. I mean, the gross levels of incompetence not to understand this at this point, just it's baffling to me. It's really more evidence of Apple not caring. In many ways, what this machine is Apple giving a middle finger to all the Mac users saying, all right, you want your cheese grater? Here's a cheese grater. All right,
yeah.
You happy?
Yeah,
it's
fine.
A cheese grater. Yeah, you want lots of slots? Here you go. Here's lots of slots. Shut up. Oh, you can't afford this? Too bad. So sad. rather than trying to actually be concerned, there's a broader market here. And that large number of you know, if you can get it down to the $3,000 level, even the large number of enthusiasts that could build that machine up over years, the disproportionate effect those people have on enthusing many others around them.
Hold on, man. You and I have spent lots of time talking about how it's the creative pros, not the enthusiasts. The argument you've always made is about the creative pros, about the influencers. The influencers, before we had the social media term influencers, that were propelling Apple along.
Many of those are creative pros, absolutely. And many of those are just pros of some sort. But like I just said before, there are the people, the core that saved Apple were not just pros. It wasn't just people at Pixar. It was enthusiasts, many of whom are pros. But there are many pros that don't care about the Mac at all. They just don't care.
What this machine does do, though, is it ensures that we will have another generation where every behind-the-scenes music interview, every studio, like the special effects, we're making the special effects for this movie. All of those kinds of scenes where we're seeing either people at work or workstations as props behind them will continue to be Macs.
Look, it's a magnificent machine. There are very few technical cons I have with regard to this machine. It has room for two 3.5-inch bays, even though Apple didn't show that. Promise Technology makes a Pegasus unit that snaps in there. It has two 8-pin power connectors, so you could put in a regular, just PC high-end video card in there and power it. And it has one 6-pin power connector in there. The MDX cards that Apple came up with are brilliant because it feeds. So a regular PCI slot feeds up to 75 watts, and that's why you need those power cords, to power like. So Apple came up with this MDX slot, which is adjacent to the regular part of the PCI slot, the 16 lane PCI card, and it supplies 475 watts in addition to the 75 in the PCI. So you could have a 550 watt card in there with no cables to it. And in addition, that extra part of the MDX slot supplies 8 lanes. And that's what the Thunderbolt ports are fed through. So you get all these extra lanes with that. So it's a really cool design. I hope other people pick it up. I hope Apple doesn't like make it proprietary because it's a very clever design. But to be somewhat fair about the pricing of this, it's not so much Apple gouging on this. We could talk about the ridiculous stand that I do think is very gougy and let them eat cake. But a lot of the components here are just Intel's high pricing, like what the retail pricing is listed as. Who knows what the upgrade price that Apple will sell it. I've seen people report anywhere from $4,500 to $7,500 for that 28-core upgrade.
Yeah,
that's not right. Apple. That's Intel that's gouging, Intel, yeah. Right? So some of the gouging here is kind of being Apple's being bombarded, lambasted with this, and there's not too much they could have done on that.
I gotta take a step out from that too, John, because I think that anybody who is complaining about prices on this Mac Pro in terms of what you do get as which is kind of different. You're saying you wish that Apple introduced something that was less
more attainable. So like a 4-core with maybe 8 or 16 gigs of RAM, that could have brought it down into the $3,500 price range. Right. That would have been like a good starter machine. And then folks can upgrade, like enthusiasts can upgrade over time. It would have been attainable.
Yeah, let me finish my point.
Six grand puts it out of reach.
People complaining about the price of this machine, especially the eventual price that we will eventually see for higher end upgrades, and not to mention RAM, good Lord, are people who don't need it. If you need this machine, it's not pricey.
But that's the point of enthusiasts. Enthusiasts don't need any of this.
But that's not what I'm saying is that people who are kvetching about it don't need it. It's not for them, and that's okay. It's okay for what it is. I will, as an enthusiast, I would like to have that less expensive version. That's not what I mean. I'm just saying that anyone who says that Apple is overcharging for this is wrong.
Well, so those are two separate issues.
Correct. Right? They're two separate issues.
And I agree with you. Like, the fact that this machine exists and is as powerful as it is wonderful, and it's a good thing, full stop. The fact that Apple made a $1,000 monitor stand, we can debate a little later, but the fact that they made a $6,000 high-end reference quality display that otherwise might cost you $40,000 is a wonderful thing that exists in its in and of itself. That is one topic. Another topic is the fact that Apple is grotesquely acting like Marie Antoinette and not understanding that it should provide a little bit more accessibility for this enthusiast market is an opportunity lost for Apple. It's disheartening to a very important group of people still that are now just, they may stick with the Mac or they may just go elsewhere. And it's sad that they're overlooking this group and they didn't have to stretch too far to get down. And my hope is that enough people, look, the reason this Mac even exists is that there were enough voices, not being sycophants like some people we know, that were complaining, and it forced Apple to turn around on that horrible trash can Mac and make this. So if enough people complain and say, please give us a better price point of entry on this, if enough people do that, maybe next year they will do that and come out with one that people can get into, and that will be a good thing. It doesn't take away from, I agree, for what you get with this machine, it's actually pretty decently priced. Relative to other HPs, Z workstations and whatnot. But that doesn't change the fact that there needs to be something more for this kind of enthusiast market that could get into this modular Mac. And Apple, it's within Apple's power to do so if they try.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would like to see Apple do that. I would be personally much more inclined to get one if it was more attainable, even if it was less, although I would like a machine with 8 cores again.
I agree. And like I said, maybe this is a thing where if enough people complain that next year, you know, all these kind of chipsets improve and they'll be able to offer the 8 core with maybe a little bit less RAM.
What about AMD chips? I know that you've been following them pretty closely.
So I did an obscene amount of research in this just for my own purposes. So let's assume the worst case scenario that the 28 core version of this chip is goes for the list price that Intel's listed at, which is $7,500. The 32 core Threadripper, and that's a 14 nanometer chip, right? So it has, you know, its heat issues because it's still a 14 nanometer build. The AMD 32 core that they just released, the version 3, is a 7 nanometer chip, right? So it's a bit more efficient, has more has a little bit more process, kind of just at least by a brute force core count. And it goes for between $1,700 to $2,100, let's say $2,000. So the Intel chip roughly costs 300% more and gives you roughly 87% of the power of the AMD chip. So why would Apple not have considered this? So for version, and this is another negative of the Power Mac, it comes with PCI 3. PCI 4 is out, and it's literally double the bandwidth. So Apple, in some sense, wouldn't have to have come out with that MPX module set because there's plenty of bandwidth in PCI 4 to have provided that. But PCI 3 didn't support, AMD didn't support Thunderbolt with it. But under PCI 4, there are motherboards that have Thunderbolt that would work with the AMD. So why not go with that? So apparently what's missing in the Threadripper is, I forget the name of the instruction set on the CPU, but Intel has this these two instruction sets that decode H.264 and H.265 not just a little bit faster, but a lot a bit faster. Like the part of the chipset is called AVX2 and AVX512, and those instructions hugely speed H.264 and 265 encoding. So my guess is Apple may have weighed some of those things and came out with, let's just go with, you know, what's tried and true on the Intel side. Hopefully that means Intel has given them better pricing. Some people speculate, even though the list price for that 28 core part is $7,500, that Apple's getting it for about $3,500-ish.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
But will they pass the savings on to us, Brian?
No.
Yeah, the odds of that are very low.
No, so, come on, man. That's crazy. So, why would they do that?
The question is, So the question is how reasonable, you know, if they take a $1,000 profit on that, all right, good for them, right? If they take a full list price profit on that, ugh, yeah, I mean, it gets ugly. It gets ugly fast. But anyway, so the AMD is an awesome, AMD, I think, is killing Intel. Frankly, they do better work. They've been doing better work, but we have what we have. And so, yeah, you know, it's a shame because we're going to pay a lot more for roughly the equivalent of what we could have gotten at one third the price at AMD had they gone with that. But it is what it is. We're stuck with this if you want a Mac.
All true. All true. So back to the question you asked me, if I wanted to get one or I would get one. The reality is it is probably out of my reach, speaking to your other points, but you probably will get one.
So it really is going to totally depend on, like, there's no way I'm going to get a 12 or 16 core machine because I have an old cheese grater, the original cheese grater Mac, and it has 3.46 gigahertz 12 core. Now, granted, the 8 core base version probably clobbers my 12 core version.
I'm sure.
But it's a psychological thing. After 9 years, there is no way I'm not getting at least double the core count. There's just no way that I'm going to upgrade that.
I felt the same way going from an 8-core Mac Pro to a 4-core iMac was like, then I don't want to.
Yeah, and weirdly, I don't have a lot of heavy processors, but I have enough. Just you could tell by, like, right now I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I have 14 full pages open on my screens right now, right? And probably 6 different apps running them. So having different threads for that is useful. And yeah.
Listen, I'm recording a show, John. Yeah. I have 27 apps open. And I only have 24 gigs of RAM too.
Right. So the point is that the extra cores are useful for my kind of work, and there's no way I'm going to do it. So if that 24 or 28 core upgrade is somewhere in the $3,000 to $4,000, I cannot believe I am such a beaten housewife, dude.
You're so going to get a 24. You're going to bitch and moan about it, and you're going to get it.
I cannot believe that I'm like, you know, if they're modestly pricing this upgrade at only $3,000 or $4,000. I mean, it's insane what I'm saying that's coming out of my mouth.
You're going to spend $10,000 more on this thing. You're going to get an upgrade for $10,000 more. That's what you're going to do.
Well, here's the crazy thing. I was going to get a 15 terabyte NVMe SSD for this thing. I'm not going to use what I'm going to get, whatever the absolute minimum, their stupid T2 lock 256 useless SSD. I'm going to get the minimum size there, the minimum RAM. And then for the actual storage, I'm going to get that 15 terabyte SSD, which goes for $2,700. Just think about that. A 15 terabyte NVMe drive goes for $2,700, which is basically the price of their 4 terabyte upgrade.
Yeah,
it's insane.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna there's a PCI card that gives you 12.5 gigabytes per second transfer rates. Obviously, that one card won't be able to max it, but that's another $400. So for $3,100, I can get an insane amount of storage.
And how much RAM would you put in?
I might just start out with the 32 and I'll see what I can get. Cause 32 is fast.
Do you think I just met you? I just met you, man? You're going to have like 128 gigs of RAM in there.
I have faster than
you can say I'm right about everything, which is pretty fast, by the way. You're really good about that. You say it a lot.
I say a lot and I happen to back that up. But, anyway, so you have some nerve smirking. I'm being very good on this show. I'll have you know. you should be a little bit more deferential with your smirk.
You could be ding like so. We at some point during this episode, we need to discuss the things that I got wrong because I like acknowledging that sort of stuff.
You like flogging yourself, all right? But anyway, I have 128 gig on this machine right now. It's rare that I use more than about 36.
Uh-huh. So okay, you're right. And I stand corrected. You'll have 256 gigs before I can say no. You're not always wrong, or not always right, John.
You're probably right about that, but it's going to be third party, right? Like I haven't even investigated that, so I'm going to get the de minimis from Apple on that. The video card thing is really interesting. So those MDX cards. So in theory, you have 8 slots, which is awesome. But the reality is one of those slots, slot 8, has is all the ports, the Thunderbolt ports and whatnot. So yep. that slot is gone. And Apple will only fill this machine with an MPX module, whether you get the base video card, which is the AMD 580, or you get one of the Vega Duo or Vega 2 or Vega 2 Duo cards. And so what's weird about those MPX cards is you have so it's 8 slots, right? One's gone, so now you're down to 7. 4 of those slots are awesomely double-wide slots. So you're thinking, oh, man, I could have 4 video cards in there, right? But the Apple MPX module versions of these video cards, because they also include Thunderbolt, they eat up 2 slots. So no matter what, when you get the 580, you've killed 2 slots. So really you're left with 5 free open slots when you get just a base machine with nothing more in it.
Which is 5 more than most people will use.
Oh, absolutely. No, I'm not
saying,
I mean,
look, this market. No. I got to ding myself on that, because this market is likely actually like the Pro Tools people will stick Pro Tools cards in it.
Yeah,
and, I mean, and the video people will probably, like, I'm sure Avid will make cards for this thing. So they will use these slots.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have already one, an AMD 9100, which is actually more powerful. I think it's more powerful than the Vega card that I already have that I might plug in. And that will only take one of the double wide slots instead of the double slots that the MPX cards do. But anyway, so I'm going to get one of those cards with it. So it is what it is. And then maybe I'll put in that card that I have already in there to drive my 6 monitors, and one of them will be off the 580. But if you're trying to be slot efficient, the most slot efficient thing you could do from Apple is get the Vega 2 Duo cards, because one MPX module will have 2 of those Vega 2s in there. So in theory, you're not wasting a slot on it because you've got 2 cards in there anyway. But who knows how expensive those things? They might be $6,000 for all we know, and in which case you're like, yeah, I'm going to just get the basic card.
Right. And I do expect the Apple's Afterburner card. I should mention one of the things we learned during Gruber's talk show live is that or maybe they mentioned this in the State of the Union too, but I haven't watched that yet. Is that the Afterburner card is programmable. So yeah, whatever software you have that is using the Afterburner card can be made to put it to use.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds... Look, if you're doing Final Cut and...
Mathematica.
Video production or anything that...
Yeah, Mathematica, the scientific apps.
I mean, it takes what used to be hours worth of transcoding and makes it real time. That's kind of scary. Awesome. So even if that card's 10 grand and that's what you do all day, you've paid for that probably in 2 weeks of time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. If you need that card, there's probably no price that is too much for it.
Yeah. I really have zero need for that card because the number of times I transcode videos.
So you'll have 2 of them.
I'm gonna take the 5th on these questions.
You know what? What's even gonna be worse? Here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna get an Afterburner card, a module.
Stick with me.
You're gonna get one. You're gonna put it in, and then you're gonna say, "Well, it really messes up the feng shui of my office," and so then it's gonna go into your closet of stuff. That's what's going to happen to it.
That is so morbidly accurate to what happens with me. So I just have nothing to say except I'm embarrassed at the truthiness of that statement. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, of course, the Afterburner card will probably have an aftermarket value. So hopefully you'll sell it and not stick it in your closet.
But anyway, my point is if people are being smart, you can get by with close to the minimum on here. You know, I can't tell people what they need core wise or RAM wise. They kind of know based on their applications, but storage wise, I think you're insane to pay Apple their prices for their stupid SSD. I'd get just that NVMe PCI card and you do way better.
So here's the question, John, right? Since we're returning to a machine that we can easily upgrade ourselves, will Apple be more reasonable with its upgrade pricing?
No.
probably not. But if they were, that would say to me that they're very aware of what they're doing to us with all their other machines.
I see you and raise you one Apple monitor stand.
That is a string raise and is not allowed in the world of poker.
Yes. Well, nevertheless, you get my point. And they've been just kind of tone deaf, gougy on a bunch of things. And the groans during the keynote when they announced the $1,000 stand. I mean, at some point, do you get it? Like, you got to. This is rumor. This is rumor. I've heard this bandied about. So, you know, hopefully this is false. Or if it was true, hopefully, since Apple hasn't officially announced this, they will kill this. But I heard that the caster upgrade for this was $1,000. Are you kidding me? If that's true, I mean, I don't know what to do. I mean, they should sell each Mac Pro with a piece of cake with Marie Antoinette's name on it. It's insane if that's true.
So this is another thing that came up during Talk Show Live. And John asked, how much are the wheels going to be?
Uh-huh.
And Joswiak was sort of in charge at this point. And Craig was looking at him. And he didn't say anything at first. The audience started laughing. And Joswiak said, there will be an installment plan. Actually, maybe it's possible Craig Federighi said that. One of them joked. One of them quipped. It's probably Craig Federighi because it was pretty funny.
By the way, Craig should just be doing the entire. There was one new lady that was up there who was very good speaker. I forget her name.
Was it Colleen?
She was one of the few people that wasn't doing the SNL, please let me read from the teleprompter like a robot about this marketing PR, and actually spoke like a human being. And I was super – unfortunately, they gave her some of the most boring announcements known to man. But she did a great job because she could speak like a human being. But Craig is one. He has good timing, good jokes, and he is by far the most like relatable human being they have. He should be doing these entire shows.
All right, so here's yet another tidbit from the Talk Show Live. Apple has a stats card for all presenters that includes how many slides per minute they can do. And apparently the fastest is Craig Federighi at 7.
I think that's a crazy, meaningless statistic. The only statistic that counts is that you don't sound like a walking, you know, plastic Ambien commercial, and that you can actually communicate in a way that's natural and endearing and engaging. The number of slides that go by is an irrelevant score. I mean, it's
yeah, but it says so much weird about Apple that they would track this and plan it and you know, use this in the design process while they're actually putting together all the material for a keynote.
I don't think Steve Jobs gave it about the number of slides per minute he was hitting.
Oh, I don't know. I bet he gave two whatever it is you didn't say about how many slides everybody else could do.
Maybe, but like
not himself.
He was a good presenter, and the point was it wasn't the number of slides, it was how well you communicated.
Yeah, all right, fair enough. Nonetheless, the joke was we'll have an installment plan. They didn't answer the question, and of course they won't actually have an installment plan. But I think that Jaws did add to that, how much should the perfect wheel cost? So that's sort of Apple in a nutshell. And there will probably be, long before this thing ships, third-party wheels.
Well, I mean, I have my own little wheels. It's funny. I've had casters underneath my Mac Pro for quite a while. But
yeah, you've had your Mac Pro sitting on a tray. You've had your Mac Pro sitting on a tray. I get it. But
you're
this
very dismissive about my awesome precognition of all things Apple.
Oh, good Lord. So when I say that there will be third-party wheels, of course there are jillions of third-party wheels out there. What I meant was the third-party wheel that will actually work in whatever sort of magnetically held-on magical slot Apple designed for this.
I would think it's just going to be a screw-in hole that's at the bottom of that.
No way. Are you kidding, man? It'll be something that just snaps into place.
All right.
With magnets. Maybe snaps. Of course, I've been wrong about everything else, so, you know, we'll see about that.
You may be right. I have no idea what they did there.
Did you catch that the $1,000 stand holds the $5,000 monitor with magnets?
Yes, I did. It's, don't get me wrong, it's very cool, but again, it's just so tone deaf. And on top of being tone deaf, they didn't present it in the best way possible. The best way possible would have been to say, look, monitors like this by pros are generally not used on a desktop in a stand. They're mounted in all kinds of ways, and we didn't want to add the cost of the stand to this. So we have a separate stand and a separate base mount. And this stand is particularly magical, right? Like actually showed it as a different product. It's like, you can mount this to any, you know, VESA, whatever, but, and probably they should have thrown the VESA mount in, frankly.
Yeah, they should have.
It's just, everyone's so shell-shocked by the $1,000 price for the stand that the $200 price for what is like a, you know, a slab of, slab of steel with a magnet on it, everyone's okay with it, because again, everyone's got Stockholm syndrome at this point.
Yeah, that was pricey too, and it should be less expensive. And there probably should have been a $200 stand option in addition to the mega $1,000 version.
And let's stop with the pretense that the base monitor is $5,000. It's not. The base monitor is $6,000.
Is it?
Because, well, yes, you can get a version of the monitor with a totally glossy, hard-to-see glare version of the screen, which professionals love, as you know. Professionals are like, oh, yeah, please, can I have some more glare on my monitor? Yeah, I'd like that version.
Or did we talk about this before the show, or did we already talk about this on the show?
I think we talked about this before the show. Or you can get the, you know, the etched version, which has an anti-glare screen for $1,000 more. So everyone's getting the $6,000 version of that monitor.
Everybody who needs that display will get the $6,000 version.
You're correct.
And that basically is essentially video pros, like studios.
So that monitor is generally costing between $6,200 or $7,000.
Right. Right. And by the way, if you think that it's expensive, it's not designed for you.
Yeah, this is an interesting case where I really don't mind that the price is that high, because if you need a reference monitor, this is actually a deal. The problem is most people don't need a reference monitor. Most people just want a 5K iMac version of the display for $1,000. And Apple really needs to make a product happen in that category, because people that, you know, Mac Mini owners are people too. They deserve a screen.
It's true. And I love my iMac 5K display. And I would love to have, if I was to get a Mac Pro, or actually at this point, if I was to get a Mac Mini, I would love to be able to have that Apple 5K display. It's an amazing display.
So here's a prediction. There is going to be a run on 2014 used iMacs. Why? That iMac, the 2014 iMac, was the last iMac that had Target display mode. So people will buy those. And I think there's a 5K version of the 2014 iMac. I think that was the first one. And they're going to use that as an Apple branded monitor.
Was that a 5K right? display though, or was that a
There's a 5K version of it. It's a good question. Does the 5K also support Target mode? I know that the 2014 iMac was the last one that supported it, so I suspect that means so. Also the 5K. The 2014 supported
5K
it.
5K release date. We will find this out to October 16, 2014.
Yeah,
that was so the first. That was the first one. Yeah.
Yeah, and that
was also the last one that supported Target display mode.
Yeah, the 2014 iMac was the last one to Target. Yeah. So there's going to be a run on those things.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. That is true. I wish I had one. Yeah, it's funny that's going to become a relatively inexpensive 5K display.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which shows Apple could do it. You know, they could put out a $1,000 version of that 5K iMac display, and people would be thrilled. So I hope that they can do one that is not a Marie Antoinette version and is one for, like, mere mortals, and like Mac Mini users.
We could see, there's a couple things we could see this fall that Apple's announcements did not preclude. One is, of course, frickin' updated iMac Pro, because that so-called Pro machine is 2 years old this week.
Yep.
It was announced 2 years ago this week. It shipped 6 months later, but it shipped with the same stats, same specs that were announced 2 years ago this week.
Yep.
So I don't want to hear any year and a half old business from anybody. It's 2 years old.
Yep.
So anyway, iMac Pro this fall, I expect that at this point. And even with the Mac Pro being announced, and then also possibly a less expensive display, maybe even a less expensive stand for the expensive display. Both of those things could happen this fall.
Yeah, fingers crossed. When do you expect this machine to actually ship? They said fall. The last day of fall is December 21st.
Yeah, probably. It'll probably be like similar. You know, the iMac Pro shipped like, what was it, the last few days of December?
Yeah, so.
So, yeah, it'll probably ship in December, November, if we're lucky. Now that said, John, I mean, let's also not give Apple a pass on taking more than 2 years to design this thing. I mean, so that was another thing that came up in the Talk Show Live, and they talked about how, like, you know, other companies design stuff faster, and there were some jokes about them basically being crap, and, you know, if you want something like this, it takes time to do. But why did this take more than two years?
Oh, you know what? That annoys me. Well, I'm glad I didn't watch that show for a whole number of reasons, that included, because it annoys me. Because if those guys had any guts, they would have said, really? You guys are laughing at all those other guys. You know what these guys have? They have PCI 4. You got some PCI 4 on that motherboard? Oh, you don't. PCI 5 was just ratified. Have you done anything on that? How long are we going to have to wait till we get PCI 4 or 5 on this machine? Probably 2 years. Is that right? We're going to wait that? You're going to laugh at them too? Well, they're shipping it now. So it's pretty obnoxious, and it's something that people that buy this machine have to decide. You're getting basically outdated slot structure here. They have a Band-Aid on it with the MPX extension there, which is very clever. I love it, especially for the power supply of it. But nonetheless, PCI 4 is out. It's double the bandwidth. PCI 5 will be double the bandwidth of PCI 4. Those are not minor tweaks. Those are catastrophically huge upgrades that are coming. And odds are, based on Intel's, and this is mostly Intel's fault because they're awful, if we're using the Intel chipset, we might be waiting a year and a half to 2 years for them to get, kind of into the PCI 4, much less the PCI 5 slot architecture. So maybe they should be a little less smug. And frankly, we had this debate, and I was challenging Chaffin's Razer. I said, no, there's a simpler version of that, which is don't mistake for, you know, these, you know, insane hyper competency, what could be explained with pure incompetence. And that's exactly what turned out here. Not only did they confess that they were incompetent in the design of the trash can Mac, and that's already, you know, in the history books, that's done. It took them this long to make what is essentially a, here's our middle finger, here's another version of the cheese grater for you, version of the Mac. So there's nothing that, you know, awesome here. I mean, there's fresh, the novelties in this machine are the MPX extension port, which is really cool. I like it. And the rest is all pretty vanilla upgrades. We're just beating housewives that, oh my God, I'm getting a new video card. Oh my God, I'm getting some Thunderbolt ports. Oh wow, it actually has power cords for the slots.
I think there is more to this machine that is interesting. Like, for instance, being able to move 300 cubic feet of, or cubic yards of air per minute is pretty phenomenal.
What they're doing on the cooling side is probably awesome. It's a radiator. It's like a car radiator in there. It's actually pretty impressive. But the point is that those are all nice things, but those aren't what move pixels during the day. And don't get me wrong, I love those things, but to sit and be smug and critical while people are actually putting out product regularly, maybe you should take it down, right? Maybe you should be just a little bit more ashamed of yourself for being complete, utter failures from 2013, which was also, by the way, a failure. So basically from 2010 to 2019, you haven't done squat. The machine still isn't shipping, and you have the guts to be smug to someone? You know what? I got some words for you that should be put in a different podcast. That's what I got for you. Ridiculous. Ridiculous. And all those sycophants don't have the guts to call him on that and say, aren't you guys a little ashamed? Aren't you? I mean, you dropped the ball, not just a little bit here. This is catastrophic.
Yeah,
this
I would like failure. I would like
what do you
to see
say about that. Why should people trust you? Why should all those enthusiasts and pros trust you with such an overpriced machine that you're not going to just dump them again 2 years from now or a year from
Simmer
now?
Simmer down, Beavis.
It's ridiculous, and you know it's ridiculous. You just
I do.
Use a foil.
I wish someone had asked, why did this take so long? Why is it still taking so long? I wish someone had asked that.
Oh, instead of just lick their eyeballs and say, oh, it's so great because you're so thoughtful. That's why it took so long. No, it was gross incompetence. How about that?
I can't. Ridiculous. I don't. When the end product is something much different than what anyone else is doing, I don't think it is reasonable to apply the words gross incompetence.
Dude, cube. The cylinder trash can Mac is another cube. We've seen this. Lucy has held this same football for us before.
Yes, so she has. Yes, she has. But the
I
point.
Can excuse the cube.
The point. I don't. I just. There's a better word. There's a better word for describing how long it took. I just. I don't know what it is off the top of my head. I just don't like.
Correct me on that, but you know the spirit of what I'm saying is roughly.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on the spirit. To be sure. To be sure.
So, anyway, I think I gave everyone the tidbits on it, which is they may have been worried. Can standard PCI cards work with this? Yes, there are two high power 8-pin power cords, 1/6 power cord in there. You don't have the full 8 slots that you might think you do in there, but you still have 5 awesome slots even with the standard set. The big thing that people were really worried about is they're like, where am I going to put my 2.5-inch or 3.5-inch drives? The Promise technology has a nice little module that snaps in the upper right-hand corner of that and gets power. And I believe it's going to be SATA-powered drives there, right? Because it's going to use the traditional 3.5-inch slot. So people were kind of worried about that. And the big question is going to be on the price of these upgrades, most of which I think savvy people can skip, but the core count, I don't know that you can. The other interesting thing is it looks like the CPU is drop-in replaceable. So people may opt to get a lower core and it may be upgradable and time will tell on there.
You don't think that'll be an Apple designed drop-in?
Maybe, but even if it is, those chips always seem to find they always seem to come out in the market elsewhere. But yeah, if it's a really, really custom, a socket for that, maybe it'll be weird. But I guess time will tell. But it does look like it's socketed, which is already, yay, a good thing. The one thing that you will not be able to upgrade is if you get, again, the 16/12 or 8-core machine, you're only going to get the 6 RAM DIMMs. And if you get the 24 or 28, you're going to get the 12 RAM socket. So that's the machine people will want. Whether or not they're willing to spend that much is a different story. Anyway, those are the little tidbits that I found out about it.
All right, that sounds good. And now we have that's the show, dude.
All right,
that's the show. Listen, I want to mention these here companies. iAmazing. Met one of the founders of iAmazing at the – actually, I think I met him before, but I actually had a good conversation with him for the first time at one of the events this week at WWDC. iAmazing makes a software that lets you manage your iPhone and lets you manage your iPhone's documents, files. It's amazing. It's iAmazing piece of software. Smile Software, they make fantastic productivity apps. Love that company. Jeff Gamet works for them now. He is the Tix Expander Evangelist. Carbon Copy Cloner makes a fantastic cloner, which means basically copying your drive. They're fantastic. Samebox I use. Actually, I use iAmazing, Smile, Carbon Copy Cloner, and Samebox. Samebox makes basically a different way of sorting your emails, and they take a lot of the pain out of doing your emails. And then Direct Mail, they are a company that puts together, gives you tools to manage and produce your own newsletters. You want to check out all of those folks. I will have links to them in the show notes. They have been very helpful all week. I appreciate it. John, I also very much appreciate you being here.
Man, I always love being on the show and talking with you.
Oh, thank you very much. All right. Well, so first we're going to do this. And then I'm going to say that's all for this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. Bass was recorded by Boom just for us. And that is all for this week. One more time, thank you, John. Thanks to the sponsors. And we will see you, or I will at least see you, next week. Gotta get a quieter mouse. It's a little clicky.